Karen, when you're not like going around promoting your new film, what are you doing? What's your job?
My job is editing. I'm working currently for WCIU, The U, which is it's a TV station that has multiple channels. So I edit promos for Star Trek and Xena. So it's a very different beast than the documentary world.
So this is your first full-length film?
It is.
That's exciting.
As a director, and it might be my only. It's a lot of work, man. It was 5 years to make this film. So, I loved it, and I say the best and hardest thing I've done with my life. And I'm just floored that we're finally at this point where we get to share it with everybody.
So 5 years, like that's a long time. Like, how to get started? Like, how'd you even get like? Are you not from Kodiak, correct?
Right. So I was brought to Kodiak. I was working as a teacher when I first moved back to Chicago from New York, teaching film editing. And the Native Village of Afognak brought me up to teach a week-long class at Kodiak College in film editing. And the whole class was Kodiakalupdic, and learning the software to continue working on their language and culture preservation efforts. And I just was fascinated and wanted to know more and more, and finally just wanted to dedicate myself to helping tell the story. And they, agreed. So I lucked into it in a lot of ways, the chance to tag along on their first Digafognak language focused camp, and really kind of took it from there.
So was it kind of like a bunch of like right place at the right time kind of moments that started this film?
Very much so. It was I told a lot of people it was a project that wanted to be made. It kind of had a life of its own, and things just kept happening that made it seem clear that this story needed to be told, and I just tried to, facilitate. A lot of the time, it didn't even feel like I was doing any more than just listening to the people who their stories seemed to be demonstrating the importance of language and culture revitalization. And, there's some really special people here. And, we were very fortunate to get to tag along on their journey.
What was like the first moment when you how much did you know about Kodiak and Aleutic and even Afognak before you came up to teach this class?
I knew it would be cold. I was super ignorant. I really was. I was just like an outsider from the Midwest. I was like, oh, I'll go to Alaska and we'll see what it's like. So I had no idea. And I like to say I entered this project knowing I was the dumbest person in the room. And that was definitely, I think, the right way to approach it, because you have to know what you don't know, and you have to be willing to make mistakes and ask the dumb questions and get schooled by the community to really understand. So I spent tons of time with cameras and without cameras. I stayed here one summer for 6 weeks and just hung out with the elders and the teachers and really, tried to understand what was going on. And to tell an honest story about this work, which is really important and really helps people, with strengthening identity, healing historical trauma. It's really important work.
Yeah, I guess like what about this story really caught you? Like what drew you to tell it?
I think it's because I'm not really connected to my own culture. I'm Jewish, but I don't practice, and I just kind of never had that sense. And then to come and spend time with people where there is such an awareness of the importance of that, and it's obviously feeding and strengthening the community in such a special way. I just could tell they were really onto something special, and I wanted to understand more about it.
Did you walk away from this project being hopeful, or did you walk away from this project kind of feeling worried?
Well, I wouldn't say it's one or the other. I think if you take into account all the challenges and all the rewards and all the incredible people fighting the battle and all the forces working against the battle, it's tough. I have hope for it, but it's like a it's a fight, and it's something that people have to. There's kind of a call to arms going on now. Roy Mitchell was on our panel at the Anchorage Museum when we showed the film there, and he described it as a linguistic emergency that's going on. And so there's kind of it's kind of a call to arms.
Since like this project is so specific to one language,
I wanted to tell a story that really showed the personal side of language revitalization and how it impacts an individual as well as a community. And I feel like by focusing on one place and one community and four women in this case, we really get to see the impact on the people, on the individuals. And it turns an issue, which a lot of people don't understand or don't think is important, into something that you can see impacting people in a positive way. So it's an attempt at really painting the picture in terms of people and turning an issue into a human issue. So in that way, this film hopes to change hearts and minds a little bit. People who might not normally think, you know, I've heard many times in working on this, why bother saving a language nobody speaks? What's the point? And it's like, well, hopefully that person will watch this film and see value in the work.
So what's it like to work on something for 5 years and now be done? Like, what's it like to finish this project?
I don't know yet, because it's not. No, I'm not really done, is what I've learned. I always thought, okay, I'll finish the film and then we're done. But no, I care about the issue. I'm going to be talking to the community about how we can continue to maximize the impact of the film. And I hope eventually the film is seen by the right people or part of discussions about more lasting support for language revitalization.
So before we started recording, you said this might be your last time that this is not the last time, but you don't know when you're coming back to Kodiak.
I know.
What's that? I mean, what's it like to return to Kodiak after you've come here so many times to talk to people and record, and now you're coming back with the finished product?
I'm so grateful to be one of the people who has been able to finish a film, because that's hard, and to be able to bring it back and share it with the community, as I promised, is huge. And I've been really kind of emotional, and it's a place that I feel is like a home, and I consider the film to kind of be like a love letter to the community. So I hope it's received in that way.
Are you nervous about showing it?
Completely terrified. But I think it's going to be good. A lot of the people who are featured have seen it and love it. So that's huge. And I just, I have done feedback sessions with elders, with groups of smaller groups of people. And pretty much it's been a collaborative experience. So they've helped to shape the film that it has become. So I hope that's reflected in positive feelings and using it for positive growth.
Is there a specific moment in the film that really gets you every time? That you see it and you're like that, for me, that's the money shot. That's where I did a good job, or that really still speaks to you every time?
I mean, there are a few that come to mind. I think the one that I'll mention that's just always, for years been a favorite scene is a new words council where all the teachers and all the elders are gathered and debate the use of this one new word. And it's a fascinating, because it really shows, the discussion really shows the complexity of the work. A lot of people think, oh, so you make up a new word and that's it. It's really complex, and there are many factors going on. That was an amazing discussion. We left that meeting after shooting it, and the cinematographer and I were just like, wow. that's a cool scene.
So what year did this officially start for you?
2013. I taught the class in 2012. I met, in addition to the folks at the Native Village of Afognak, Carrie Sherrod, who just, it was funny. We were just talking yesterday. We kind of had a moment when we met where we kind of looked at each other. She had told me about the language movement. I was like, that's fascinating. I feel like there's something there. And we kind of had this nod, like, yes. And I think we sort of knew that we would wind up telling this story. I wound up sending her a proposal a few months later. That's just saying, I want to make a documentary about this. And it sort of took off from there. Native Village of Afognak, you know, gave us some seed funding and invited us to their camp. And just, it was, it wanted to live. It was a story that wanted to live.
What were some of the biggest challenges of this project?
Well, funding, ironically enough, just like with the language movement, you know, there's, you have to write grants and you have to wait and you write more grants and you do a lot of research. And I mean, in the end, I'm so glad that I did all that because I'm way more qualified now to have told this story. I've done a lot of research. But it's really hard. And I think also, as an outsider, you had asked, making sure that it is collaborative and that I am checking in often and making sure that people are being reflected in a way they're comfortable with, very important. So those were both big challenges.
Sorry, I just lost my train of thought.
Take your time. Happens to me all the time.
It's just like, how many hours of film did you take? Like, how much tape did you have to go through?
I guarantee you it was over 200 hours of footage. And, you know, I pretty much, I seem to have done everything I could to make this the hardest possible first film I could do. Okay, let's pick something that's really far away from where I live, so travel costs are high. Then let's pick something that only three people can translate because it's spoken by so few people. You know, I just really, you know, kind of didn't, luckily didn't see all the challenges going in because I might have been too daunted to take it on. But the way it worked out, I just took on one challenge after another, and I had a lot of help and a lot of support, and the community has been incredible and open and trusting, and it's been something to see, to watch it all kind of come together.
What do you want the Kodiak audience to take away from seeing your film?
I want them to be proud, to feel like they can use this as a tool to increase support, to get more teachers, to get more learners, and to have more action and more enthusiasm. You know, it's always good to just keep people riled and ready and ready to take on the challenge.
It seems interesting to start a documentary on a language that you can't speak.
Uh-huh.
Like,
it's a little crazy, I know.
Like, what was it like over the years just listening to this language? Even the first time? Like, what was it like to be in that yurt listening to small children learn the language for the first time?
I was completely overwhelmed and out of my depth. I was, quite frankly. But I knew there was something really special going on. Like I say, I was just drawn to it, and I saw the enthusiasm, and I saw this kind of magic, this kind of spark that was going on, and people were getting so much out of it. And, you know, even when the cameras weren't running, I'd be, like, looking, and it's like, oh, what's going on here? What is that? Why is it so powerful? And I just followed the curiosity, my natural curiosity, which, you know, there are pros and cons to being an outsider, I think. You know, the con is that you can't understand where people are, you know, you can never understand the full experience and tell it from that place. But the pro is that I can then ask all those dumb questions that somebody else from the outside, other viewers, aren't going to know about and are going to be curious about. So I just followed that natural curiosity, and that, you know, that allowed us to tell a story that is seeming to resonate with people even outside the movement.
How would you describe the language to someone who'd never heard it?
Like, describe the sound?
Yeah, just like how, like, what it is to you, like the characteristics or the character of it to someone who's never heard it.
Hmm. Well, I'd probably just count because I can count. Achlinguk, Maluk, Benayun, Shtamen, Tatlimen, and acknowledge that some of my pronunciation is needing work. But I guess with like Yiddish and you know, there's a ch sound, and that there's a similar sound in Aleutic, so there's like a guttural earthiness to it. That's probably what I'd say.
And how much Aleutic do you know after working on a documentary about it for 5 years?
I think I might be able to speak like a one-year-old. I might be that good. You know, we'll see. I'm going to observe the language nest on Tuesday, and, you know, we'll see if I can understand what they're saying.
Did you ever get made fun of by the kids who were learning, like, at the immersion
camp?
Oh,
sure. Oh, sure. We got teased by everybody, but it's all in fun, and, you know, there's a lot of warmth. There's a lot of warmth.
What's your favorite word?
Oh, gosh. I can't pronounce it properly. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Candace, I'm sorry. I know I'm going to say this wrong. Achgatstachdatdatna. It means they always tease me.
That's a good one to know.
It's apt for me, I think. Oh, and also nachluaka, which is I don't know.
What was it again?
Nachluaka.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
That's the one I would gravitate towards, definitely.
I knew I needed to say a few of those, you know. Koyana, thank you. Chamai, hello.
You, like, in the beginning, you're like, you tell people this is, like, the hardest thing you've ever done, and you don't know if you'll ever do a film after this. Why is it the hardest thing you've ever done?
Well, I think, you know, the combination of, you know, it's basically 5 years where I'm putting in between 30 and 60 hours a week unpaid, and, you know, a lot of times... And this is going to sound negative, and it's not, but it is, there's a lot of times that, you know, feedback is hard, and figuring out the story is hard, and figuring out, you know, what people do want to, because they wanted to help tell an honest story too, but, you know, what are people comfortable sharing and what is not okay. So there were a lot of, you know, tough conversations to get to this point where we have a story that we're all comfortable sharing. And that we feel is honest and will help promote the movement. So it was not a cakewalk, but it was a very worthy walk.
And why do you think it could be the last time you make a film?
I have a job, and I've been kind of working two jobs for some years now. And right before I came here, my boss kind of said, do you work here? Because I've been traveling and going to these festivals, and I need to show up at work. I think that's why.
I mean, that's definitely a thing probably people don't think about when, like, you're an independent artist, but also, like, working on a paycheck. Like, yep. You just got to take the time to make money and stuff.
Kind of got to pay my bills, yeah. So, but it's been a great, I mean, I wouldn't trade it for anything.
How many festivals have you gone to with this film so far?
We went to Vancouver, Hawaii, this little festival in Wisconsin, but in a beautiful old opera house, Driftless, the American Indian Film Festival in San Francisco, and now we're in the Anchorage International Film Festival. So five so far, more coming.
And I may have asked this already, but, like, you know, like you said, like, it's 30 to 60 hours, like, a week, unpaid, 5 years. How do you put it down?
You're asking things I do not know yet. I'm afraid I'll be jonesing. I'll get home and I'll be like, I need to edit something. But luckily, I have to do the DVD extras and acknowledge all the people that, you know, you can't put everybody in the film, but there's so many amazing people. So we're going to have DVD extras that acknowledge those folks.
How many people, like, if you had to estimate, helped you get this film?
Oh, gosh. Well, you'll see the credits are just crazy. A lot of people, like, too many. It's crazy how many people it takes to make a film. I haven't counted.
And I don't know, what about Kodiak do you like? Like, I don't know, like, what kept you here?
I couldn't even tell you. I just fell in love with it right away. The water, the beauty, the people, the language, it has a quality. There is something magical about this place.
How many trips do you make?
I still haven't counted that up. I need to figure that out. I think I've made it somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 to 12 trips, but different periods of time. You know, some were 6 weeks, some were 5 days. So the total amount of time I've spent, I'm not sure.
Where did you get the title?
There's a song that's in the film, and there's a scene I'm not going to give away where the song is being sung, and it's a 200-year-old song that the Aleutic people gave to another tribe, to the Tlingit tribe, and it was in 2010 given back to the Aleutic people. So it was an ancient song.
How did you prepare for this whole project?
There really wasn't a lot of time to prepare, actually. I sent the proposal to do the documentary, and they were like, okay, well, you know, we'll see. And the green light came months later without a lot of, you know, it was like suddenly we had our seed funding, and I had a month to pull together a crew of 5 people and get to Alaska and have all the equipment that we could go to a fog neck with all this equipment, with no electricity or running water, and spend a week. So it was a big challenge to pull it all together. So it was sort of panic mode, I think, is how I prepared. Adrenaline.
You just really leaned into being the dumbest person in the room and asking all the questions?
You got it. Embraced my dumbness.
It's not the worst thing to do.
True.
Have there been times when, like, the people around you not in Alaska have been like, what are you doing? Like, where are you going? And, like, why?
Still, and I think forever, will be people in my life who are like, And, you know, people who I consider very smart, analytical people have said, like, why save a language? Or that movie sounds boring to me. And, you know, if you don't want to give it a chance, then that's going to be your prerogative. But we don't think it's boring.
Well, what do you say to them? What do you say to that, like those questions or those responses?
I kind of say that because if you come into it with a closed mind like that, where you're just like, I'm not going to like it. I'm not here to convert somebody who has no interest. I'm here to anybody who has interest, who sees that there is value, who cares about other cultures. Those are the people that this movie is for. And it would be lovely if we could ask some of those close people to sit down and watch it and give it a chance. But I can't force people. So I'm just going to hope it reaches as many open-minded people as possible. And, you know, I don't think anybody walks around thinking they're closed-minded. So hopefully everyone will come.
So for the people who can't come to any of the screenings, like, where can they see this? Where can they see this movie?
We are working on getting a PBS broadcast. So I would say sign up for our newsletter, go to our website, keeptalkingthefilm.com, Facebook, keeptalking-thefilm, Twitter, keeptalkingfilm. But yeah, just follow us on social media and we will announce for sure as things become available, which they will be over the next few months.
And it'll be a DVD, and I'm sure it'll be online at some point as well.
Yep.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Well, what's one thing you've learned from this project that's going to stick with you for a long time?
The importance of interpersonal connection. You know, a fog neck is such a remote island, and to see modern-day kids adjust to dropping their smartphones and just play and talk and communicate and have FaceTime and do intergenerational communication, and how happy that makes everybody. And I feel like we're forgetting that, like, as a culture, and we all really need a reminder. So making this film was my reminder, and I hope the film itself serves as that for others.
What's it feel like to see this culture that survives so much continue forward? I mean, it survived. It's been around for thousands of years. It survived the Russians. It survived American colonialization, boarding schools.
Yeah, to take that in, how many things it has survived through, is a testament, I think, to the strength and will of the people, and how the language itself wants to live. You know, there's someone in the film who references the Keep Talking song and says they think it's like a prophecy, you know, that the ancestors wanted it to continue. So Nyuha Yuha.
Is that Keep Talking?
Yep.
Just checking. Mm-hmm. Well, is there anything else you'd like to say?
Mm-mm. That's it.
All right. Well, thanks, Karen.
Thank you so much.